Is it a phantom, a demon, or the devil himself? There's nowhere to turn, nowhere to hide, no way to stop the car.
There was no driver in the car.
Universal presents The Car.
Spoiler alert, the following podcast includes discussions on film that may potentially, intentionally, or inadvertently reveal plot twists, character traits, story details, up to and including endings, that might otherwise be considered spoilers. Proceed at your own risk.
You are listening to Movie Sucktastic.
Sounds like some bad movie.
Oh, another week, another episode. Are you there, Mr. Wilson?
Yes, I am.
Oh, there he is.
There. Ready for action, ready for movie statistic.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Where the hell is your video?
Where's my video, sir?
Where is it?
You tell me.
There it is. Look at that hat. Come on. Look at that mustache in that hat.
James Brolin inspired me.
Scott's got it going on.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to Movie Sucktastic. The one with the hat is Scott. The one without one is Joey. In this episode, we're reviewing 1977's The Car.
Oh, yeah. Oh, goody. Oh, I almost didn't make it this week.
I know. It's been a rough month for everybody. I know. But we're here, and we're talking about killer cars.
Killer cars.
Quite a few killer car films out there. Fond memories while I'm watching this. I mean, you've got your Maximum Overdrive, Christine, of course.
Well, that all came after this movie.
Right. The Cars That Ate Paris, The Hearse, which we reviewed last episode.
Right. There was a lot like Duel, you know, Spielberg's Duel. Yes, yes. You know, these are all...
I believe this film was inspired by Duel.
Yeah, Duel had come out, 5 years earlier or something like that? Duel was 72?
Don't ask me.
Oh, that's right.
You're the numbers guy.
I know. I'm tired, though. I'll look it up.
Let me take the rein and just guide us through the opening as far as like what the film is. The film, the 1970 film, The Car.
Duel, 1971. It was off by a year.
Okay. Elliot Silverstein is the director. Multiple writers listed.
How many?
Two story, you know, and also a story by. So three it looks writers? Like yeah, what?
Three writers,
but really, it looks like two people originally wrote the screenplay, and then they had a third person
fix it.
Yeah, they didn't fix it too good, but
no, I mean, and at its heart, this is a TV movie. I mean, it's rated PG. I mean,
I'm also shocked. There is a TV version where they had to edit out extra violence.
What extra violence?
The one thing I like is that the barrel roll scene is cut entirely out of the TV version. So, like, you don't even know what they're referring to when they're saying that there's other people dead.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But it's a mild, you know, it's a PG. Yeah. But, you know, you need G for TV.
Oof. Well, back then you did. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I want to say, I don't think this is a bad movie.
You know what?
I don't think it's good.
No. But you know what I liked about this movie? That
I do like stuff about this.
80% of it took place during the day. I don't know why I like that as much as I did.
I know why, because the last film we reviewed took 90% took place at night with a black car in night, watching it on a black road. It's like eye strain.
Yeah, it's like you'd have to have a blackout room to watch this thing the right way. Mm-hmm. Just blackout curtains for your windows, door closed, all the lights off.
All the way up.
And an OLED television. And then maybe you can see something.
You turn the settings high enough so everybody looks like albinos on the screen. But I can see the car.
I can see it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this film, this is a beautifully shot film.
You know what? And there are a lot of really good scenes that I liked in this movie too.
There's a lot of great there's a lot of great set pieces, like the backdrops. There's a lot of every time there's a scene with a group scene, there's a wide shot and you can see everybody. You can tell the guy likes a busy background.
Right.
Or a full tableau. And it comes across. It's very well, I don't know, directed.
It is, and the director, Elliot Silverstein...
It leaned more towards the cinematography than the direction, but...
Yeah. He's done some notable things.
Mm-hmm. Most of which I haven't seen.
Same, but, you know, he did some very popular... I mean, he did, you know... TV, a lot of TV, but mm-hmm. You know, he did do a couple of movies that were popular, like what, Cat Ballou? Is that one of them?
Yeah, again, every film he made that is, you know, that is like a classic film or a popular film, I have not seen. He's outside of my scope. I never heard of The Car until it came up a few weeks ago,
right?
And I'm happily. We watched it. I mean, so the film takes place in a small town. What was the name of it? I can't pronounce it because it's like a Y.
Oh, does it say?
Islet.
I didn't really catch the town's name.
I'll look up the name because I have the pictures. But I mean, it's a small little desert town. There's only one road leading through it. You find out later, and we open up with two young, healthy-looking teenagers bicycling through tunnels and on the road, and then they're both brutally run over by a black car.
Yeah. Both thrown over a cliff and a bridge.
Yes. Not just thrown over a cliff, ground against the... For a PG film, it's a pretty gruesome death. Yeah. I love the shot, the final shot of the broken tire spinning with the bloody wall in the background and the one shit. Fucking beautiful.
And you don't know who's driving this vehicle either until it comes up a little bit later that it doesn't have an actual driver or perceived to not have an actual driver.
Right. Santa Inez. Inez. Y-Z. That is the name of the town, if you were curious.
I wasn't, but thank you. Okay. I'm sure everyone else was curious.
Right. So, after these young kids are killed, we're introduced to the local sheriff and his girlfriend, who's the local music teacher, Hottie.
Yeah.
And the sheriff has two daughters, and there's the whole... I mean, one thing I like about this film is the characters are really characters. I mean, I actually... I'm actually involved in every single character in this film. Like as cheesy as it is with the whole, oh, well, the old wife's gone and here's the girlfriend, but I just can't figure out how to get my young children to accept the girl in, you know, in the, but it works. It works because James Brolin's a likable actor and everybody plays these characters as humans.
Yeah. And there's a, like, Ronnie Cox is in this too. He plays Luke. Which, when I saw that in the opening, I'm like, Ronnie Cox is in this?
Before he turned and went to OCP.
Yeah, that's right. Before, well, he was in Beverly Hills Cop before he even did RoboCop. But yes, and same.
So he got promoted first.
He got promoted first.
Despite the drinking problem. Yeah, I mean, his character, he has a drinking problem, and it's a believable drinking problem. It's not, it's like, oh, he's 2 years sober, and then, oh, shit, half my friends are dead. Glug, glug, glug. I mean, it makes sense. You know?
Are you talking about what I think you're talking about? No, no. Yes, yes.
Yes, yes. I loved him too, man.
I loved him.
I mean, well,
you know who that actor is, by the way, do you?
Who?
The guy, the chief. His name is Everett in the movie. His real name is John Marley.
Mm-hmm.
He was a TV actor. He mm-hmm. did films too, but he
recognized a couple things.
Yeah, but he actually did not become a notable and recognizable actor until the 60s. But what set him over the top is he is in one of the most iconic, if not the most iconic, scene in movie history. He played the film director in The Godfather, the first film. And
you lost me.
Hold on. Marlon Brando wants his godson to be in one of his movies. He sends over Robert Duvall to go negotiate. He says no. They kill his horse and they put the horse's head in his bed.
Okay, I've heard the scene. I'm aware of the scene.
Yes, it's probably the most iconic, if not one of the most iconic scenes in film history. He is the guy in the bed with the horse's head. And
that's not what I recognize him from, though.
No, he's been in plenty of other things. Was he in the Ten Commandments?
He's in Cap Blue.
Well, yeah, because he, you know, he's.
I'm just saying.
Well, because it's the same director. But
I think I know him from Hooper.
Hooper? I don't know him from. I know him from The Godfather.
Yeah, because he's in Hooper. And Hooper is a film I watched many times as a child. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure when I see him and I automatically recognize him, I think it's because of Hooper.
No, he wasn't in The Ten Commandments.
But he was in Hooper.
He was in Hooper. I'll take your word for it. But yeah, he was actually in the beginning of his career. He went uncredited in everything he did until 1950.
A lot of people did back then. I mean, yeah. You know, credit for what?
Yeah. Well,
jeez. He plays the chief of police.
Yeah, he's the chief.
Chief, yeah. So Everett's the chief, and like, and all the cops too. For 1977, there's definitely some of that hippie influence to it, especially like on the female side. Mm-hmm. But for me, what really gets to me is I'm not used to seeing cops in like at this time period portrayed so emotional.
Right.
This is a police station full of fragile, emotional men.
In a small town where nothing happens.
But it's just like the men who feel, and they feel hard. There's a lot going on. Yeah,
are you saying all the men are hard?
Yeah, hard men. Who doesn't like a hard man?
I'm just, you know, just clarifying.
Yeah. I know what you mean. So, but
like for instance, this shot here is a picture of his dad. He must look at that picture like three times in this movie. It's like, Dad, what would you do for right now, Dad? Like, you know, that's what they're trying to convey in those scenes,
right? And I love the fact that they do that instead of giving us 5 minutes of my father and this and that. No, all we need is the framed photo. There's some great storytelling in this film because they don't really drag it out. They don't spend a lot of time telling it. You know, they do a lot of show don't tell, but it's just it's a well written screenplay except for the ending. But
dude, that ending, like that, it's like Tremors. Like the director Ron Underwood is probably like, you know, there was this movie in the 70s that I saw as a kid and I really liked it, but I'm gonna do it better. Like my ending's gonna be the same, except it's gonna be better, make more sense. Did you not get a Tremors feel for that ending?
Oh yeah. When I originally thought I knew what they were doing, but then they ended up doing what I thought they were, but they weren't, because then they did.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, even Tremors did like the dynamite and everything. I mean, it's just like that's the first thing I thought of when I saw the ending. I'm like, oh, Tremors.
But well, the interesting thing is, they did it better. I think the film, the structure of the film is pretty sound. The first act of the film, the film starts with the two deaths, the two teenage girls.
Yeah, immediately.
Then the French horn player, French horn playing veteran, is killed outside the dynamite guy's shop, house.
Right.
In between wife beatings. But and then we're introduced to that character too, the dynamite salesman and his abused wife, and of course she's like an old flame of the chief. So that's going on in the background.
That's right. He there's a pan shot, but there's a he's in the foreground, and James Brolin is the background. He goes, "She was the first." Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, he lost his virginity to her.
Well, when the cops show up to the first killing that they're aware of, which is the French horn playing veteran hitchhiker.
Yep.
Yeah, when they come up to the house, by the way, I love the fact that the ambulance driver gets out of the ambulance carrying a bag and a shovel. Seriously? Seriously? That's hilarious. But yeah, so they're all at the crime scene, and there's every shot's a wide shot. You can see every character. You know, this is like classic, like big screen. You know, this is like watching Mad World. You know, everybody's on screen, but like every now and then they'll stop and everybody will look at the battered wife and she'll look at them and then they look at each other. It's just one of those like silence, a lot of staring, a lot of quiet staring, a lot of staring, a lot of staring. Not going to say it. Just five minutes of, I'm not going to say it. You're going to say it? I'm not going to say it. She's not going to say it. All right, we're not going to say it. But it still kind of works.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I think when I initially went to go watch this, I'm like, I'm not going to put this in my collection. I'm going to keep this one.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I also love, and again, when we first meet the wife beater at his house with the hitchhiker out front.
Oh, yeah. What was his name? It was Amos.
Amos. When we meet Amos, I just like saying wife beater. When we meet Amos, we're not even 10 minutes into the film, and in the background, clearly visible, is his big truck with danger, dynamite. I was like, I don't think that's going to come up in the next hour and a half. Check off dynamite truck is okay. It was glaring to me. It was done subtly. I personally was like, oh, slap in the face. Yeah, that's coming.
It's coming.
Yeah. But there's a lot. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of shots like that. Every other shot in the police station when there's cops there, he makes sure that there's stuff going on in the background. The Indian or Native American actors, their characters, those were interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like how they had that kind of Indian folklore just in the background. Just like, well, the moccasin telegram says things are going, the winds are getting high, so they're all heading back into the hills. Really? What does that mean? Oh, no. That's all you get. I like that. I like that. They didn't really try to pin it on a specific legend or anything. They're like, oh, no, the winds are high, so we're just getting the fuck out of town.
Yeah. Getting the hell out of here.
Good luck. Good luck, white man.
I'll tell you. So this film came out in 1977. Yes. Came out theatrically, so it does fit our format. And mm-hmm. But I can't find any money that this thing made. I mean, this is like the classic drive-in movie. Like mm-hmm. This is what you would seek if you're going to a drive-in. This is the kind of movie you would want to watch at a drive-in.
But there is a listed theatrical release date.
Yeah.
Well, it is possible.
It was released May 13th, 1977.
I mean, it is possible that maybe they did a East Coast, West Coast release and then ended up selling it direct to TV.
It's possible.
Even though it wasn't made for TV, they ended up selling it. Maybe they ended up selling it to television.
Let me see,
after that.
My favorite website, The Numbers. Let's see if they have any money.
Those guys.
I love that site. The Car. Oh, it made $152,000.
There you go.
It made something. Oh, here's why it made no money.
I was talking about The Car. Why did it make no money?
Because Star Wars came out 12 days later.
Oh, yeah. The what now? Star Wars. Oh, okay.
Then Smokey and the Bandit came out 2 days after Star Wars and still managed to make money. Made $127 million. Dollars. That's pretty crazy.
Nobody's seeing this then. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody.
Well, back in those days, that's overspill. That's okay. The theater's packed. You have to watch another film. Well, let's go see Smokey.
Right.
Back in those days, it was actually a good thing to be released against a big budget film because then all the
when that's sold out, it's like, well, what should we see? I guess we'll go see this killer car movie.
Yeah, but now it there's too many theaters. It just spreads too thin. There's no benefit to that.
Right.
Yeah. Now the car itself, I'm not in the cars. I don't care much about them, but I did see the whole idea where all they did was they basically lowered the hood about 6 inches and raised the fenders and the grill about 6 inches to give it this kind of squat, monstrous effect.
Oh, right.
I mean, psychologically it works on you, even if you don't notice it. There's no door handles on the thing. The huge grill in the front. The front, I mean, all cars look like faces, but this one really does look like a face.
It really does. Plus, you know, they black out all the windows and...
Not black. They're orange. They're orange tinted.
No, they're black windows.
No, they aren't. They're orange because when we look through them, we see orange glaze.
It's orange on the inside looking out, but from the outside looking in, they look pretty black to me.
On the outside, they're dark orange. You need to go back and look again.
What?
Maybe for the close-ups, they did black, but when it's actually driving, they're orange.
I saw a bunch of close-up shots. It looked pretty damn black.
That's what I just said. Maybe for the close-up shots, they're black, but for the driving shots, they're orange.
Okay. I just noticed black.
No, it's a spectral car, so it can do both. I'm not really...
Could do both.
No, I mean... And we're talking spectral car. This thing actually appears and disappears and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if it's on purpose or not, but I mean, the fact that they don't explain anything is great, but they also, you never really have a clear reason why it fucks with certain people too.
Initially I thought maybe, Amos. It's like, is it after him in some way? Because the first, not the first victim, but the hitchhiker was in front of his property. And I was like, man, are they going after him for some reason? Because, he gets arrested because he beats up his wife.
Mm. No, he didn't get arrested that one time. They threw him in jail. I don't know why he was in jail.
He got thrown in jail because he was around when the car killed the chief, Everett.
He was still in jail for that?
No. He was put in jail after that.
Yeah, but I don't. I missed why.
Because he was near him, and they didn't know if they just think some crazy person's in the car, and
Yeah.
You know, he's a witness, and because he was a witness for the hitchhiker, they threw him in a cell. But it kind of...
Because they needed him for the scene near the end.
Well, so yes. I was like, all right, so he's there for the first kill. Then he's there for the chief of police. I was like, maybe this car's after him in some way, because two deaths right in front of this guy. Turned out none of it was there for that. No.
And they brought up the idea of, like, if you curse the car comes after you, which makes sense for the hitchhiker, and it makes sense for the girlfriend.
The girlfriend, yeah.
Ooh, excuse me. And it makes sense, but it doesn't really make sense for the sheriff. I mean the chief. Although the chief did, like, was saying, like, damn it, damn it, damn it before. But, I mean, I don't think that counts if you're just saying, damn it, the car knows he means him. From a distance, I don't know if that would. So that seems kind of weak to me too, and I mean, and the car killed a lot of people that never got a chance to curse it. So I'm saying for the girl that might have been the reason, but I don't think that's the only reason it'll kill you.
I mean, who knows if there was more of maybe like a.
I like it vague.
Well, yeah, but you know, it's open to interpretation. I mean, maybe. These people are being judged, and we just don't know why, you know, by this demonic vehicle.
Yeah, interpret this then. Why is the car playing nice with the sheriff?
Oh, you, James Brolin.
James Brolin, yes. Wade.
Yeah, Wade. How about those numbers, Wade? I don't know. It was interesting that, you know, he was kind of loosey-goosey with him.
Yeah, let him shoot him. And then the whole thing in the garage when he wouldn't let him open the door.
Right.
Kept stopping him from opening the door, but then backing up. I was like, what's he want? It was interesting. And I kind of like Wade's response, too, which is like, fuck, I'm going to fake him out and dive out the window. All right.
Yeah, it's a big, dumb car. You know what scene I liked that was actually before that scene? Was when the one sheriff, what was his name? It was, he had a Metcalf.
Metcalf, yes.
Who I initially thought was the lion from Wizard of Oz, just by kind of how he delivered some lines. I'm like, is this the lion from the Wizard of Oz? And then I looked it up and I'm like, no, it's not him. Because he's kind of like, and I'm like, what? Is this the line from The Wizard of Oz? anyway, he's going up. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was just trying to add to yours and say, there were a couple of actors I had the same thing. Was like, he looks like somebody else. I had to look him up. So, no, it's not. A lot of them looked like young versions of older actors I've seen in other films.
Right.
Yeah, that's all I meant.
So he's going up the cliff. You know, he's going all the way to the top. And then... he's like, you better get up here. I'm near the top. And then the next shot is the car in his direction, like coming at him. And then mm-hmm. he ends up going around it, and he's like in a T-bone situation where he opens the door. And I love the shot where the car slowly closes the door for him. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really great shot.
Yeah.
I really did. It was all like, no. Don't get out. And then it just slowly goes up to the door, and then you just see it close. And I thought it was actually great. I would steal that. I would steal that and put it in another movie. Like, that's what I would do.
I think the film balanced very well loud and silent moments. With there's a lot of like the car revving and chasing, and then everybody stop and silent and contemplate. It does help build tension. And it's almost like a road trip. It's like there's long stretches of like quiet contemplation, conversation, and then bursts of just cars running over people.
Right. Carmageddon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the film actually has a couple surprises in it too. First, like Amos. First of all, the minute you meet Amos. I'm like, okay, so this is the white beater who's going to die sometime in Act 3.
Yeah, that's why I thought that the car might have initially been after him. Like, that was going to be a plot point. It turned mm-hmm. out not to be that way. And he didn't die.
Right. I was like,
when they asked him, when they pulled him out of the cell, I'm like, we need you. And he has this half crooked smile. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're dead.
Yeah. I was like, blowing up in a truck.
Yeah.
T-minus 5, 4. No. He actually turned out to be useful.
Yeah.
For once in his life. I really didn't expect them to kill Sarah Silverman.
Holy shit. I thought the same thing. I'm like, she really, like, I'm like, this is like Sarah Silverman's doppelganger from the 70s.
I thought you meant you were surprised when she died.
No, it was not. But I was, Sarah Silverman just kept coming up over and over when she was on screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To the point of where I looked her up. I'm like, is there any connection? And there's not.
Not only do they kill the girlfriend, but they do it in probably the best kill scene in the film.
It is the best kill scene in
the movie. The car just leaps right through the fucking house.
And you see... Yeah, and you see like her like whip back because you see the impact of the car without like making it gory. So
And again, here's a film where after that horrible destruction, there's 5 minutes of the cops just standing around the broken house as the ambulance people carry out the bloodied sheet covered body. Yeah. And then them just staring off in the distance, barely saying anything. It's silent emotion, contemplation, then more cars. It's got to up until the last 10, 15 minutes. This film is very well paced and really knows what it's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not wrong. Like, for instance, when she goes to her house, she was going to go there. And then go over to his house to stay with the girls overnight. Mm-hmm. So, but she needed to go.
Good thing that didn't happen.
Well, yeah. So she went home first. And when she's outside, she has a piece of paper and it blows in the wind. So she goes to grab it. And like this huge gust of wind comes through. And it just kind of puts the fear of God into her. And she runs back into the house. And the first thing she does is she calls her boyfriend, James Brolin. Wade, she calls him to like tell him all about what just happened, and she's like, it's like I can hear that engine, I can hear it. And you see the lights turn on in the, she has a picture window
slowly getting bigger,
and it's just closer, and she's like, it's like I can hear the engine. And then it just crashes through the house, takes her out, and then drives through the other end of her house and out the back.
Now, since the scene before this involved her, while they know there's a killer car around, running into a four-way intersection to grab a piece of paper, she deserves to die. And then after she does that, she looks at them and goes, oh, God. It's like, no, you abandoned God when you ran into the intersection like an idiot, knowing this is the third act. We know there's a killer car out there. Stop.
That's right.
And, oh yeah, and talk about stupid too. She also is the reason all those people die at the parade. I love that sheriff tells Luke to tell the school to cancel the parade in the afternoon, but Luke gets drunk, so the parade goes on, and the parade with who has so many horses involved in a parade with what looked like middle schoolers?
Right.
How many, who's giving middle schoolers horses for a parade?
I don't know.
But anyway,
some desert town in the middle of nowhere. Everyone grew up with a horse.
And I love the fact that there's one cop there. He's the one that warns them the car's coming. And then he dies when the horses trample him to death.
Yeah. Now, there's a shot, and I don't know if it's a stunt or if it's a stunt gone wrong, but there is a shot where there's a horse and it literally tramples over a person. And from when I saw the shot,
it was the cop.
No. But I know the shot you're talking about. It's one of those shots where like the camera is looking out and you just see like the horse running in one direction, and then it literally tramples over a person. It's a long shot. So it's like one of those where it's like, oh, I don't know if that was supposed to happen.
It's okay. It was a stuntman.
I'm sure it was, but it still looked bad.
No. I was joking.
Yeah. It looked bad enough where I'm like, oh boy.
So Sarah Silverman.
Yeah.
Yells for everybody. Run to the cliff. Run to the cliff. Run past that tall concrete stadium bleachers to the cliff. What the fuck are you doing? Go to the top of the stone bleachers.
Well, later on,
but
the car is driving into the mountainside and the whole mountain is shaking. Based on that scene later in the movie, I'm sure it could have taken out some bleachers.
They didn't know that then. At that point, all they knew it was the car. They didn't know it could take down mountains and blow up and shit. They didn't know that. They hadn't even tried shooting it yet at that point. Stone bleachers was an obvious first choice. Sorry. Now, and you could say, yes, they'd made the right decision because they ended up in the old graveyard and right. The car couldn't get in there because it was consecrated ground.
Yeah,
that's just same thing, right?
But that's what Ronnie Cox says. He says hallowed grounds.
Okay, but yeah, all right. Fair enough.
I'm sorry. splitting hairs.
One, that's still just a theory. Two, they didn't know that. Three, the stone bleachers were right there.
They were right there.
Yeah, so that annoyed me. But I was actually enjoying the film enough where I didn't harp on it too much.
Suspension of disbelief.
Yeah. And I mean, some of as I mentioned before, so at one point during the day when the cops are trying to chase down the car, they have two cars on both sides of the road, so they can't get around us. We're coming to the bridge. And the car does a slide, skid sideways, and then does a barrel roll over the cars and explodes them both.
Yeah, right?
Which is like right out of Drive Angry.
Yeah, another...
Just...
For sure. But
I mean, all right, so... I mean, did I forget anything? I didn't mean to forget any kills, right? Because after it kills sheriff,
it's the two kids, it's the two kids, it's the hitchhiker, it's the sheriff.
Chief.
Or the chief. Then it's the parade.
Right. A cop, a couple of farmhands. No kids died as far as I could tell. So I think they lost like three then.
Right. Then it's a parade. Then it's the girlfriend.
Then the cops.
Oh, then the cops. No. Then the cops. You're right.
That's five. And that's five cops die during that thing.
Yep. Then the girlfriend.
Then Silver Sarah.
Silver Sarah.
Yeah. So, and I already lost count. But yeah, so that's how many the cars killed up to that point. And like I said, the pace is pretty good. It's like slow, fast, slow, fast. Then they hatch their big plan. And like that scene where Wade's getting ready for the big night, and all of a sudden he just turns around and the car's like right behind him in the garage sitting there idling.
Right.
I mean, that whole sequence, on the surface it's stupid, but it's really a well-done, tense scene. And then he gets on his motorcycle and he races away and he begins the plan.
He's too early for because
the car's too fast.
Because the fact that the car surprised him.
Mm-hmm. So yeah.
The plan is ahead of schedule for execution, so it's too early.
There's a plan. The car always knows there's a plan.
Well, because he's trying to stall the car because they call him and says stall him, and he tries to do that and the car's like yeah no and veers off to the left. So he's now chasing the car instead of the other way around.
Right. So you're making it sound so exciting, though, but it's not.
No.
Because this is where the film falls apart for me. Because basically, once the chase starts, you're kind of in. Because then the guys are driving their sorcerer trucks full of dynamite, and they're all racing to the same spot. But once the guys get to the location, all we have is scene after scene with one or two cool shots, but it's just him driving in circles in dirt, the car driving in circles in dirt, a bunch of guys digging holes in dirt yelling at each other. Even worse is once Wade abandons his motorcycle in the quarry as part of his plan and starts rope climbing, everything just, that's it. Because now we're just watching two guys pull a rope, one guy hang on a rope, and five guys running as slow as possible, carrying shit. And it just keeps going on and on. They couldn't just have it all set up and just have like a 5 minute, it's like all the padding. Every piece of silence up until this point, every like slow moment up until this point was intentional. Every slow moment, once the chase starts, totally unintentional, just bad filmmaking.
Yeah.
And it's not even a good plan.
No, it's a terrible plan. Worked better in Tremors. I swear to God, I was like, is he going to say, can you fly? Like, in some way. And I'm like, I wanted that to happen because I'm like, oh, Tremors was an ode, you know, to the end of this movie. You know, I was hoping for that. It didn't happen, but.
I was hoping for something that I love that once they bury it or they blow the dynamite up and then they just lay on the ground for half a minute while fireballs move around in the sky.
Right, in the shape of like a demon.
I love how Wade is staring off in the distance. Like, we did it. It's gone. And then Luke's right behind him. Did you see the fireball?
It's over.
Luke, it's over. The fireball. Huge. Roaring flame. You saw it too, right?
Demon Luke. Face. Mouth. Tongue.
It's over. But and then it plays that triumphant music at the end. It's like, no, Luke's right. What about the fucking fireball? All right, but let's be fair. How would you end this film, sir? I don't have anything planned either. It just kind of occurred to me, you know, how would we write the ending to this if we're going to be so critical about it?
I mean, having it jump off a cliff and then blowing up. First of all, just the scene before showing that the car knows that there's a plan,
mm-hmm.
and knows and is traversing this area throughout the entire film. It's like, you don't know there's a cliff there? It's like, seriously? See, the reason why I worked in Tremors is because the Graboids was underground.
I just thought of a great ending.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right, here's how I fix this film.
All right.
Two ends, two quick reshoots.
Okay.
All right. First, Sarah Silverman makes it to the sheriff's house, and when the car kills her, kills the kids too.
Okay.
Bear with me.
I'm with you.
Everything else goes kind of the same way, except at the end, during the whole kerfuffle with trying to get the vans around, instead of them actually doing their plan, everything goes tits up. We lose a couple more sheriffs, not Luke or the Native Americans, but a couple other random ones. We lose a couple more of those, you know, dwindle the numbers a bit.
Sure.
And then Amos gets in his dynamite truck and just drives head on into the car and blows.
Oh, head on collision? Sure.
Yeah. So that comes. You have the whole thing. Everybody thinks it's gone. Like the Native American and Luke, they pick up the wounded guys and they head back to the car. And the sheriff's just standing there. They drive off. You hear an ambulance in the background. Then the car just pulls up. Wade looks at it. The door opens, and after like a 2 minute silence, he gets in and then it drives away.
Wade gets in.
Yeah. Oh. Wife and kids are dead. What does he got going for him?
I guess
there. Better film.
Better ending.
Better ending. Not a better film. Better ending. And still not a great ending, but it's better than this one.
It's way better than this one.
Yeah.
Maybe if he said, "Can you fly?" and then it blew up, then I would probably be like, "You know what? This ending's awesome." But
can you imagine farting music?
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
For a year.
You know what I didn't like? And a lot of movies do this, and I don't like it in any movie that does it. So there's a lot of scenes in the, not a lot, but there's a handful of scenes in this movie where they're trying to show how fast everything is, and all they do is film it in a normal speed, or like the vehicle is driving at a normal speed, and then they speed up the vehicle, like the film. I hate that. I think it's so cheap. And it's just so lazy. It's like, oh, we want to show how fast this is. We're just going to speed up the film.
Totally agree.
I don't like it. I never have, and I never will. I mean, when I see that in a movie, it's like usually in a comedy. They'll mm-hmm. do that because it's funny to look at because it's not normal. It's funny, you know. Or like when someone is running and then they speed up the film and they run like. Like even fat, it's just like it's. I hate it. I hate that. I hate it a lot.
I don't know if this means anything, but I just noticed it and I thought it was interesting.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot. There are three or four shots, maybe more, where it'll be just a close up of the tire on the ground.
Yeah.
And the tire still, and then the car will slowly start rolling, and the camera will go with the car slowly. I paid attention. That's not a camera rig on the car.
What is it?
They probably had a dolly next to it. But I paid attention. Oh. And there's like a very.
I liked those shots, by the way.
No, they're great shots. But like, if you pay attention, the easiest way to get that, where the camera moves in total sync with the car, put a fucking camera rig on. But then it occurred to me, this is a custom made car. They're probably not strapping a fucking camera rig to it.
Yeah, probably not.
So I was impressed that those scenes are really, you know, they're really tight. But if you pay attention, you can just see just like the slightest bit of a difference where, oh, okay, that camera's not attached to the car. And I noticed that I wanted to mention it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed this film. I got a lot of slides out of it. I thought it was really beautiful shots. Some funny ones, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought I was going to just barrel through this movie and just be like, okay, just watch the movie, get ready for the show. And in the end, I ended up liking it.
Mm-hmm.
So are we at the part where we're going to rate this movie?
I think so. Kudos all around to the car. Now,
it's currently rated a 6.1 mm-hmm. out of 10. I don't think this is a 7.
No,
it's 7.
If the ending was better, I'd be for a 7.
You're right. I agree. I think this is a solid 6. I think it's well above average for what it is. For a glorified TV movie, I actually enjoyed this. Usually I hate movies that feel like TV movies. I hate TV movies.
I saw some reviews of the film where people complained that the dialogue was unrealistic, and I disagree totally.
Yeah, I like the dialogue.
I think it's realistic because it's eclectic and bizarre. There's scenes where people are just talking over each other. It's real. People don't normally say interesting things. They just babble and say stupid shit. Yeah. I like that. And like more dialogue, less dialogue is more sometimes. In this film, I think it means something.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So 6. Rated 6.
6. 6 it is.
Yep. Now, what do you want to do next week? Because I have a suggestion.
Is this movie the third car review in a row?
Is it? No, we did the car, and then we had the hearse.
We did the hearse. We
did Megan.
Hold on. Let me look. I have it right here. One moment, please.
I mean, we did review Death Race 2000 in the past.
No, I'm just talking about like the last few episodes.
I know. I'm just thinking back to other stuff we've reviewed that was car related too. Not many. Don't do many racing films, do we?
Dark Latitude. What are you looking up? What our last few episodes were. Yeah, no, it was the hearse and the car. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I know after the hearse, I suggested we do the ambulance because the one guy from the hearse, the older guy with the mustache, reminded mm-hmm. me of what's his face from the ambulance. It was in Young and the Restless, that actor.
Oh yeah, yeah. The mustache guy.
It was yeah. I forget what his name is. I think it's a German name. But it was just like, man, he looks
like Timothy Dalton.
He just no.
Yeah, with the mustache, I thought he looks kind of like Timothy Dalton with a mustache.
Timothy Dalton later, but I'm talking about for the time period. I'm like, he looks just like that guy from Young and the Restless and the Ambulance.
Yeah, he looks like Hot Fuzz Timothy Dalton.
Hot Fuzz. Yeah, well, okay, I'll give it to you.
Thank you.
I mean, 35 years later, but okay.
Now. Did you find out an interesting fact about the movie The Car that I didn't know until I was researching it?
I didn't have time to research.
Okay, then this may surprise you. There's a sequel.
What?
Uh-huh.
Is this your suggestion? I hope not.
From like 5 years ago.
It's not a remake, it's a direct sequel.
It's a direct sequel.
Fucking what?
But I think it's direct to video, so I don't know if we can do it.
Is it called The Car 2?
It's called The Car... it's like The Car Vengeance on Wheels or something. Let me look it up. I should have had it ready for you, but... Here we go. Come on. Oh, also the thing I found is that clips from the car were used in a Knight Rider episode or two.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The car, Road to Revenge?
Road to Revenge, that's it. 2019.
Get the fuck out of here.
four out of ten. But was it theatrically released? That's the question.
Let's find out.
Release date, January 8th, but it doesn't say... Internet, January 8th.
Internet.
No.
Can't do it.
You're lucky. You're so lucky.
I'm
still going to watch it.
Am I, though?
Yeah, so what do you think? You want to do a car film or you want to do... We can do the ambulance if you want. I wouldn't mind doing something like that. That's a film we've seen that we've never reviewed.
Oh, this looks awful.
I know, right?
I mean, this looks like it has nothing to do with the original film at all.
I know. I had to read synopsis after synopsis just to confirm that it actually is a direct sequel. Because it doesn't really, like, nothing on the surface says, yeah, this is a sequel to The Car, except the name.
I mean...
Yeah.
Is this like a dystopian, you know, post-apocalyptic future? I mean...
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And they build a car with parts of the original car. And then it becomes possessed with a professor or something.
Holy Jesus. Have you read the synopsis?
I've read through several of them, and I'm still not 100% sure on what I'm...
An unscrupulous district attorney is savagely murdered and tossed out of a building onto his brand new car. Mysteriously, the district attorney and his car come back to life as a single being with a thirst for vengeance.
Okay, I've read some longer ones and something
mentioned. Well, this longer one is in a dilapidated cyberpunk city plagued by crime and corruption. An unscrupulous district attorney is savagely murdered and tossed out of a building into his new car. Oh, okay, so they took a little excerpt from what this guy wrote. Mysteriously, the district attorney and his car come back to life as a single being with a thirst for vengeance. The eerie driverless car embarks on a vicious rampage, extracting revenge on the criminals who murdered him. The car, Road to Revenge, is the stylized sequel to the unconventional cult horror classic The Car from 1977 and features an homage to the original with the return of Ronnie Cox as the mechanic. So it's a cameo and Ronnie Cox isn't dead.
Unconventional. I think it's a good way to describe The Car. I'm glad you read that. It is unconventional. Again, like I said, at the time, I felt it was very unconventional to have all these cops that were all sad and like emotional and feeling and stuff. and the, you know, the fact that they make the wife beater kind of like one of the heroes at the end. There's a lot of little things like that. Right. It is an unconventional, an unconventional horror film. It is a horror film.
For sure. Wow, this movie looks fucking
partner
awful.
I know.
Oh, there's Ronnie Cox.
So what are we thinking? You want to go with your ambulance request, or?
I don't know what I want.
All right, well, we don't have to decide now. We can just wrap up.
What I do have to find out is if Ronnie Cox is playing. His name is, nope, it's a different guy. He plays a different character.
Okay.
So he played Luke in the original film, and he's playing Waits in this movie.
Hmm.
I wonder if that was a thing from, he's like, listen, I don't want to reprise the role from the original. I'll give you a cameo, but that's it. Although it would have been.
Right. He doesn't want to sully the good name of Luke.
Yeah, right. It would have been interesting if he was Luke and he was just a mechanic now.
And evil.
So here's a trivia, it says here. When Waits, the mechanic, which is Ronnie Cox's character, rebuilds the car, the donor car he gets parts from is the car from the original movie.
Okay, that's what I was referring to then. Okay.
It says unofficial sequel.
I kind of like that. I mean, I know it looks bad and it sounds bad and it probably is bad, but still, making a sequel from this movie, you got to admit, that's a pretty original way to do it.
True.
I heard somebody say recently in one of the videos I watched where they and I thought it was very interesting. They said most sequels are glorified remakes.
Yeah.
And he was talking about one that wasn't, but I thought it was very interesting. I said, yeah, you know, a good sequel is one that doesn't feel like a remake. It actually is a sequel. Like it feels like a second part to the story and not just, oh, here's the same story, but now we're going to change things up a bit.
Yeah, true. No, you're not wrong.
I just thought I'd mention that because it kind of reminded me of that. And that's why this sequel does, you know, it sounds like a real, okay, now it transient years. But then again, it actually does sound just like a remake, though. So I take that back.
All right. I think it is time.
Yes.
It is time to end the show.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Let's do that. All right, everybody. As always, thank you for joining us for another episode of Movie Sucktastic. Go to our website at moviesucktastic.com. Go to our iTunes page, and you can download or listen to the show there. You can leave us email. The email address is themovieguys@moviesucktastic.com. If you want to leave us voicemail, it's 908-514-4470. You can go to facebook.com/moviesucktastic. Anything we post there, from when we go live to trailers to everything else, is there. You can also just do a search for us online, your favorite search engine. Just do a search.
Google
for
it.
Yeah, Movie Sucktastic, and we come up everywhere. You can also download our podcast app for your Android device at moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk, or just download your favorite podcast player and do a search for Movie Sucktastic. We come right up. That's it. Do you have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
Did you ever notice you can't brush your teeth without wiggling your ass?
You're right. That's a good point. Yeah, it's a good point. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next week when we review something else.
Something else.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Happy trails to you.